Voice of Literacy, where literacy researchers, teachers, principals, parents, and policymakers share and discuss how literacy research informs practice. Join the biweekly podcast and discussion forums. My name is Dr. Betsy Baker, Professor of Literacy Studies at the University of Missouri. This week we hear from Dr. Suzanne Miller, Professor of English Education at the University of Buffalo. She does research involving digital video composing in classrooms. Welcome, Dr. Miller.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how in the world did you get involved and interested in digital video composing, or maybe even what is that?
Well, I was an English teacher for many years, and at a time in the 70s we did many courses. I did video production. At that time we were using razors to trim the editing and edit the tools that, we used editing by cutting the film apart. That didn't work out very well because you had to make very short films. In 2000, when I found that there was a new opportunity to use digital computer programs to make videos, I became very excited about the possibilities. At the same time, there was a real urgency to the local urban school. The students weren't doing well. More than half were dropping out of high school. And I thought that putting the two of them together would be a good idea. What is digital video composing? It is taking a piece of the curriculum and having students create a video that represents the major concepts or a major concept or their perception of what's going on in the curriculum, but as related to their own lives.
So this happens in all subject areas?
It is in all subject areas, mm-hmm. Although I have to tell you we haven't been successful very much with math, but we've been in all of the other content areas. Mm-hmm. So students were able to make videos, poetry videos or informational videos or public service announcements or coming to a school near you, those kinds of video genres. And we found it to be very engaging for students. And so for this study, I was interested in looking across all the research we've done since 2000 to see what we can come up with as far as principles for a learning framework.
Now, you found six interdependent themes, and while we can't go into all those here, people can read your article. What was something you found most intriguing from your synthesis of the literature that's out there?
Well, some of it was not too surprising, such as the social need, the need for social space for students to work in and to feel that there's something purposeful for them to do. I think that the new literacy stance was an interesting finding, though.
Yeah, what does that
mean?
Some
teachers were not able to make the transition from the traditional ways of teaching literature, let's say, into the ways of using literature so that multiple modes or, by that I mean images, sounds, music, voiceover, all the things that you need for video, mm-hmm. so that they would be able to allow their students to use all those modes in making the video. But trying to think about, let's say, teaching literature with video composing as part of the curriculum was not an easy sell. And so teachers over time, we studied them, came to understand by making their own videos, but also by having students make the videos, they could see the learning that was happening. They could feel that this really was literacy. It's not something that's just used stuff done outside of school, that it could really be a learning tool in a classroom.
Yeah, and that was something I was going to ask you. What does this have to do with literacy? If I'm an English teacher and my students are shooting video, are we really on the playground now?
Yeah. There are always those people who will lean in no matter any time students are out of their seats and say, oh, I see you have the crayons out in a very dismissive way. And I don't think that that's a good attitude for us to have in classrooms. When students are active, when they are engaging in making sense of the curriculum, that is literacy.
Yeah.
After all, that's what literacy is all about. It is enacting meaning in some way. At least that's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
And so when teachers can see that students really are making meaning, one of the examples in the article is about a teacher who at first was not successful, but then she realized that when students had more of a role, when they felt purposeful, that they could really do something remarkable in a deep engagement and also learn the curriculum. For example, she said that there were students in her classroom that for the first time, this is the 11th grade, the first time they realized literature study is exciting. Reading literature is exciting. It's not just for the test.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what usually happens with these videos? Are they for class use only? Are they posted to YouTube?
We have some of them posted on YouTube. We have a website that we post the award-winning videos on, simply because we need to get the permissions, and so we can't post all of them, which I would have liked to have done. Also, we have a yearly festival where on the big screen in a local movie theater we show the award-winning videos. We show usually between 15 and 20 videos. They're only maybe a minute to 3 minutes long, but they take a while for students to do, and students bring their parents and community members, and it's very exciting. So that's another element of literacy, of course, to communicate meaning, to represent your understanding for an audience.
Yeah.
So that's worked out very well. And of course, in the classrooms, teachers always screen the videos. And then they get to talk about whatever the content is. If it's Jim Crow laws, then the social studies teacher can talk about Jim Crow laws. So those things are really an important element.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that you've done this study, what would you tell teachers?
I would tell teachers that students do know things that they can learn from their teachers, the teachers can learn from students, but also the teachers can help students in these processes, that the mediation, that was one of the big findings, meaning just the support right when students need it, supporting them in thinking through an idea or asking the question about what kind of music are you going to use with that, anything that helps them further their thinking. So that's an important piece of it. And we have examples of teachers on film actually kind of crouched down beside students, looking up at them and asking them, mediating or supporting students' thinking. And other teachers have pointed out that image of a new role for the teacher to be, actually this one teacher called it a third arm as students are making the video. So I think that's those kinds of learnings can happen, and that teachers can learn that way of teaching that has much more power for students. There are all kinds of images of the students, their heads leaning together around the computer screen or around the storyboard or around the little playback screen on the camera. And this, for us, was like the center of all of this. Students being engaged. And then our research showed they are also learning, not for the short term, but really for the long term. You can ask a student about a video they made last year. They can explain it in great detail and also what it was about and what they were trying to communicate. So I think that's an important thing for teachers to think about if they're thinking about trying to do video or other multimodal composing strategies.
So exciting. I mean, we could just talk forever, I think. And maybe shifting to some of these other audiences will also get to some interesting questions and points. So what would you tell parents? So, you know, I'm kind of thinking, well, if I'm a parent or a principal or a policymaker and I walk in and see you doing films, I'm wondering if you're teaching English anymore. You know, so tell me what you tell parents.
Parents get this more than teachers. And I think that parents get it because they see their students coming home, their children coming home, being excited, talking about Jim Crow laws, talking about this poetry video that they did. And mostly the teachers then get feedback from the parents about, this is the first time that Nevin has been excited about English class and he's 16 years old.
Yeah.
Or this is the first time that Dahlia has thought about reading a book for fun, and she never did that before. And these kinds of events that happen outside of school, students wanting to stay after school or come earlier, stay over lunch, parents know about that. So so that quickening that happens with students as they become engaged and find school meaningful, Parents get that. They see that. And I think that with a little bit of help from the teacher or from the school explaining what's happening, it's not a big reach for them.
Yeah. What do you tell principals?
Well, principals actually are a little harder case in some some schools. In some schools, they're under great pressures to do scripted learning or direct instruction.
Do well on the test.
And that's a hard sell for them.
Mm-hmm.
We have instances where the actual, let's say, science supervisor in the school was trying to tell the principals, no, you don't have to do direct instruction in science. Inquiry is what we need, which is ready-made for the video making.
Right.
And so the principals, I think, because of the pressures they're under, teachers don't often think about that so much, but they're under administrative pressures. It's hard for them. But there are enlightened folks who are in administration and in some of the schools we've been in where they're delighted when they see the students' effort, they see the learning, and we even have evidence. It is qualitative evidence that it does show up, this video making, on their test scores. So that's the kind of sales pitch that we can give to them. Besides, they really do like to see technology integrated into the school.
Yeah.
And that's how we got into urban schools that were perhaps a little skeptical about what we were doing by framing it as technology integration. But it's kind of a Trojan horse that you get in the door, and then all this other good stuff empowering students and learning and community and all of that stuff is happening under the guise of just technology integration. So principals can be compelled. It just depends on the big context of the community and the district that they're in.
Well, gosh, to get kids, you know, motivated and, like you're saying, talking about school matter before and after school, and, I mean, you know, it's can't be any better than that. So what do you tell policymakers?
Well, policymakers are the ones that are creating these tensions in schools by producing new tests that have to be taken and by students in order to graduate or to have students get placed into academic intervention or all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. I would like to tell policymakers exactly what parents and student and teachers and some students in New York State told our governor, which is these new tests were brought in too fast. There's too much pressure to pass them. There's something wrong with the test. Too many people who were before competent or excellent teachers now are being called developing teachers because of their students' test scores. There's something fundamentally wrong there. Policymakers should listen more to parents and teachers, but also listen to the research, what you're asking teachers to do, this evidence-based or this research-based practice. That's what policymakers should also listen to. They're very selective about what they listen to, and if they were to read this article and have questions about it and talk about are there alternative ways of approaching learning in different content areas, ways that maybe would engage more students in a classroom and would engage a larger segment of the population so that we don't have more than 50% of students dropping out of school.
Yeah.
I mean, the economic and the social things that happen to those people as a result of not having a diploma, you can just imagine. We're saying now, well, we really should have a college degree. These students drop out in 9th or 10th or 11th grade, and all of the research shows that primarily they are saying school's not meaningful. It's not purposeful.
No.
It's I don't feel respected there.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have found in the research is that they get very engaged, and oftentimes the students who were problem kids become stars.
Yeah.
So that kind of transformation that can happen in a kid and in a classroom, that's what policymakers need to understand and listen to, I think.
Wow, nothing more valuable than that. So what research do we need to do next? Where are you going with this next?
I think that this primary goal was to get out the work that this helps with learning. Now I've become very interested in what is it that we can do to demonstrate to policymakers and principals and parents and others that this kind of composing is parallel to and also a bridge to academic writing.
Mm-hmm.
We have students who would make a video about a piece of literature. One student, Nevin, is a great example. He said he could never understand how to write these academic essays that are part in New York of the graduation test. In order to get out of high school, you have to be able to write a good essay that passes. And he said he couldn't ever figure out how to do it. Again, he's 16 years old. So what he did was make a video about a theme that he saw in two texts. His teacher was very smart about a very purposeful kind of video that he would do, but also about supporting along the way this mediation. And he was able, once he made that video, including a scene where somebody was giving water to a homeless man, you know, a scene straight out of his life in Buffalo. And so after all of that, he said, after I did that video, writing the essay was really easy. I came to understand that you should just take a part of the literature and use it to support your theme. And I used my video as my body. I used this part of the video as my body paragraph. So the video became a template for this kind of writing. So what I would like to do is really study that thoroughly. And by the way, Nevin did pass the graduation test, as did the rest of the students in that class. And that's not usual in the school districts for all the students to pass the test. But they had really deeply understood and studied a text, and they came to understand what the purpose of these essays were for the test, because before that they weren't purposeful at all. This is what I want to study, how the video composing or multimodal composing of any kind really transfers to academic writing. And I'm working with someone who does quantitative research, so we could do the pre-post and also the qualitative piece. We find out what teachers say about what happened, what students say about what happened, so that we have a mixed methods evidence base for the power of digital video composing to do the kind of academic things that we do want to do in schools, but that not everybody has the language abilities to do when they are kind of limited to that one mode, what Kress calls monomodal kind of learning.
Well, your work is so exciting. I'm just reinvigorated as I listen to you, and I'm going to turn now to thanking you for being with us today.
And thank you very much for having me.
Good to have you. And to let our listeners know, you can find Dr. Miller's research in the Journal of Literacy Research, Volume 45, Issue 4. You can stay current with literacy research by following the Voice of Literacy. You could go to iTunes, Facebook, or Twitter and search for Voice of Literacy. Or go directly to our website, www.voiceofliteracy.org, where you can find a link to this article and additional work done by Dr. Miller. We invite you to join our online discussions of this and other podcast episodes, peruse a schedule of upcoming topics and guests, and post questions for those guests. This is the Voice of Literacy.